I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
And we are, as always, exhausted.
You know, I was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to say it this time.
I had to start right with it because literally, without a doubt, every mini episode, we're going to start out with being fucking exhausted because life is exhausting. There's a war going on. Mask mandates are being lifted. There's still a pandemic going on. Everything is fucking nuts. The world is crashing around us. How are you?
And what's going on? Still expected to continue with the same amount of productivity. I think that that's an issue. Like, I posted something into my stories yesterday about that, where it's just like, I think we're beyond the stage of like, how's everybody dealing with the stress? How's everybody doing?
It's like, we're all doing bad. That's how we're doing.
Not well. And like, no one really, like, they'll ask you how you're doing, but they don't actually want to address anything that could make it any easier. Like, I'm talking like at your job and stuff like that. They're like, mental health check-in, everybody doing okay?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I would do better if I didn't have to be required to have the same level of productivity output as I would in normal times.
I would also be doing a hell of a lot better if you'd be paying more for my time while I'm doing all this. That'd be great.
Like,
thanks.
LOL. No.
That's so cute.
That's not what we meant.
No.
Actually.
My boss actually showed me this thing that was really funny. She's from Northern California, but she lived in the Midwest for 8 years. So she like loves Midwestern humor and stuff. And she follows this meme page and it was like, how to know a Minnesotan isn't doing okay. When you ask how they're doing, they said, oh, I've had better days, or I'm just trucking along, or something like that, because we'll never actually say that we're doing bad.
Yeah.
We'll just be like, oh, you know, we're just getting through the day.
Yeah.
That's how you know a Midwesterner is about to, like, you need to check on that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
they're
see
not,
if they're okay.
They're not well.
They're not well. And honestly, sure. Like, a customer asked me today, like, how are you doing? And I was like, oh, you know, just getting through the day. Or I said something like that. And I was like, wow, I actually just did that because I'm screaming internally.
we've really gotten to the point now where I just am like, you know. Oh, you know.
Oh,
it's
you
usually
know.
My response when people are like, how you doing? You're just like, oh, you know.
And then they're like, I do know.
Yeah, exactly.
I do know.
Yeah.
You know, at least we're not alone. We're not alone.
Actually, I think that we collectively as a society should come up with something else to say to people except for like, how are you doing? Like, we all know that we're not doing well. Like, no one's doing well.
Just start giving. I just give people compliments. Be nice to people. Don't give people a hard time. Be nice to your wait staff. Be nice to people working everywhere. We're doing our fucking hardest.
Like, right. Especially now, you know, like you said, the mask mandates are being lifted.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a time of change.
It's a time of change. It's a time of pure upheaval. And I think we should get into more of the crazy stuff that was happening within the past week. I am sure both of us want to talk about the war on Ukraine first.
Sure. I have something very specific to talk about. So
let's talk about your very specific thing then, and then we'll go from there.
All right. So I want to talk specifically about Black students and foreign students in Ukraine right now. So I'm sure everyone has been bombarded with news. I feel like anything that comes up on my Apple News like alerts is all related to what's going on in Ukraine, which it makes sense. I mean, of course.
It's the biggest thing happening in the world right now.
Right. And about a million people, as of this morning, I got a New York Times alert to my email, about a million people have now fled Ukraine. And among those people are, of course, students in Ukraine, specifically African students, and they feel like they are being discriminated against while trying to leave the country. So video footage has circulated on the internet this past weekend, and it appears to show Africans being blocked from trying to leave Ukraine's borders in the midst of the military conflict. So the images obviously sparked condemnation on both sides of the aisle, and it made the hashtag Africans in Ukraine go viral. So as the Russian invasion of Ukraine continues, foreign students are attempting to leave the country, and they say they are experiencing racist treatment by Ukrainian security forces and border officials.
Mm.
There was one African medical student who told CNN that she and other foreigners were ordered off the public transit bus at a checkpoint between Ukraine and Poland. They were told to stand aside as the bus drove off with only Ukrainian officials on board. And you can see in these videos, they say to them, basically, we have to take real Ukrainians first.
Oh.
And so, these people are being left in like very cold conditions with no provisions
and waiting. Very dangerous conditions too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Being told to walk basically to the next checkpoint.
Right.
Sometimes
so these
far distances.
So are they assuming because they're black that they are not born Ukrainians, or are these all people who have come from other countries to Ukraine? Because to me, that seems like it would be difficult. Like if you're just talking about a general population of people, or if there's like checkpoints because they're born in another country, you know, like, is there any details on that?
There's not. So most of the people who have been interviewed are students. They are, there's a huge population.
So like they were coming from elsewhere to come to, right, to Ukraine to study.
Yeah. Specifically, there's a huge population of Nigerian students,
right, okay,
in Ukraine who went there specifically because it was a, you know, more affordable option,
yeah,
place for them to go to medical school in Europe. And so they chose to go to the Ukraine.
Okay, so a lot of Ukraine. So a lot of these people are like international students,
yes,
and things like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. I was just curious about the details there. I mean, either way, it fucking sucks. I was just, and is
right,
absolutely disgusting and horrible, because anybody who is within your country, even if they are visitors, should be treated with the same respect that you would treat anybody,
right,
else.
I mean,
because
in a potential life or death situation,
that's what I was going to say, everybody is in the same level of danger here.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
No matter where you come from.
Right.
So everybody needs to be protected.
Yes. Agreed. So there was one Nigerian first year medical student who was interviewed, and she said she was left stranded at the border with, it was like 400 miles outside of Kyiv. And she told a CNN reporter, more than 10 buses came and we were watching everyone leave. We thought after they took all the Ukrainians, they would take us. But they told us that we were to walk, that there were no more buses, and they told us to walk.
How far do they have to walk?
I'm not sure. There was another story where they had to walk 4 or 5 kilometers, which I don't know what, how much that is in relation to a
kilometers
mile.
Kilometers means nothing to me, but it's still longer than I think one would want to walk with probably your belongings.
Well,
and,
yeah,
you know.
Let's find out. So 1 kilometer is about 1.5 miles. So,
okay, so it's like almost double-ish that. Let's say they walked like almost 7 miles-ish.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that's not okay. You're carrying all these things. You're scared. You're literally running for your life. And now you're like, no, just kidding.
Right. And
walk.
And they're not given any, like a lot of them, they don't have blankets, they don't,
yeah,
have jackets that are meant to withstand that, you know, because they left rather quickly, especially.
Yeah, and it's still cold there.
Right. So this woman goes on to say, my body was numb from the cold and we haven't slept in about 4 days now. Ukrainians have been prioritized over Africans, men and women at every point, and children. There's no need for us to ask why. We know why. I just want to get home.
Yeah.
And people of Indian descent are sharing similar experiences. Quote, they allow 30 Indians after only after 500 Ukrainians get in. To get,
wow,
to this border, you need to walk 4 to 5 kilometers from the first checkpoint to the second one. Ukrainians are given taxis and buses for travel. All other nationalities have to walk. They were very racist to Indians and other nationalities. And this is a 22-year-old from Mumbai who said this to CNN. So there's been a lot of talk about who's to blame for this. Well, there's no doubt at all that
racism, systemic
racism,
right, in everybody.
Absolutely. Racism and xenophobia play a huge role in what's happening to Afro-Caribbean and Indian students in and residents in Ukraine. Many have also criticized the reaction and inaction of their home countries,
yeah,
saying that they haven't offered assistance or made any arrangements to help them return safely.
Mm.
So Nigeria in particular has faced criticism. That same student that I mentioned earlier, who's,
yeah,
from Nigeria, said that the Nigerian government is being their usual nonchalant self in basically kind of all shoulders, or they were until all these videos and everything came out.
Yeah.
And according to the BBC News, there are about 4,000 students from Nigeria in Ukraine.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's a huge, like, national problem for their country as well. I mean, they're hopefully, I don't know if there's, like, an embassy program or anything like that where you can go and be like, look, we need some fucking help.
Right. Well, Nigeria's foreign affairs minister responded to the criticism, saying that Ukrainian authorities had assured them previously that there were no restrictions on foreigners wanting to leave Ukraine. So they were like, we didn't think that it was going to be an issue, I guess.
Right.
And African nations on the UN Security Council on Monday condemned discrimination against African citizens at the Ukrainian border. And they said, or rather, Kenyan ambassador Martin Kimani said, "We strongly condemn this racism and believe that it is damaging to the spirit of solidarity that is so urgently needed today. The mistreatment of African peoples on Europe's borders needs to cease immediately." And U.S. Rep. Ilhan Omar, who had immigrated to the United States from a war-torn country, from Somalia, she tweeted, quote, "Bombs don't check your nationality, and border security shouldn't either. Everyone fleeing Ukraine is in desperate need of shelter. I hope neighboring countries who are opening their borders to Ukrainians wouldn't discriminate against Africans and Asians. Let's lead with grace."
Yep.
And I think that that's really what it comes down to, is that I understand we're in a very scary situation. I understand maybe even their very like elementary logic in terms of wanting to prioritize their own citizens.
Right.
I understand that. However, everyone is in danger in this situation.
Yeah.
So,
oh gosh. I mean, what I wanted to discuss was just kind of a broader kind of like what's going on also in Russia right now between their citizens, because there is a giant divide between Russian citizens, between the upper class that are in the pocket of the Kremlin and the lower to middle class that is very much against what's going on in Ukraine right now. So there's a lot of, I won't go into detail with all of that, but there is a lot of infighting right now amongst the citizens of Russia between those who are for the war and those who are against the war. I've been seeing a lot on the internet and on Reddit, especially, of Russian soldiers who seemed unaware of what they were doing in Ukraine.
I heard a lot about that too.
Not wanting to participate and all that kind of stuff, and being, you know, they were told that there were Nazis in Ukraine that needed to be taken care of. And once they realized that there wasn't, they felt duped, you know, like what are we even here for? And I can totally understand that, because I think that there was so much of that during the war on terror, I feel like, where a lot of the soldiers that would go there would just be like, what am I doing? Am I really helping? Am I really doing anything? And it makes me happy to hear that not everybody is just blindly following their dictator, and people are thinking and seeing with humanity what's going on in this country and aren't here for it. I also wanted to talk a little bit about some of the sanctions that are going on. Russia has now been shut out of sports like hockey, chess, which apparently is a sport. No offense.
Did you not see Queen's Gambit?
I did not.
I didn't either, actually. I watched the first like couple episodes, though.
I watched the first half of the first episode and I just wasn't feeling it. I don't know why. I just I couldn't get into it. Football, motor racing, and by art galleries, Harley Davidson, Disney, and the Eurovision Song Contest, luxury car companies.
Even Switzerland broke its neutrality to be like, nah.
No. Yeah. They also are shut out of Norway's sovereign wealth fund, and many more have partaken as well. Many other countries are partaking in all of these sanctions as well, which is starting to halt the Russian economy. The ruble is losing a lot of its value compared to the American dollar, and all of these kinds of things that really look horrible for Russia. But Putin has been preparing for this moment for, I guess, like 8 years. He built up a war chest of about $63 billion in international reserves, including currencies and gold. But at least some of this has been frozen as the economy is under assault. The U.S. has also banned U.S. dollar transactions with Russian central bank in a move to prevent access to this, quote, rainy day fund. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has said that they would also be banning transactions with Russia. So they're hoping that if enough banks shut down, Putin won't be able to access that $63 billion that's going to help maintain Russia's economy and things like that. Capital Economics is now estimating that at least 50% of Russia's reserves are now off limits to Moscow, which is huge. Like, terrible, but I mean, for like the people who just want to survive, but like good to be able to like beat them out, you know?
It's really tough, because this sucks for everyone. Like, yeah. It's so terrible for every innocent civilian.
Everyone at war is losing. You know what I mean? Is having a hard time right now.
Right. Yeah. All because Putin wants to, like, wave his power around. Like, that's kind of the thing, is innocent Russian civilians are going to feel the impact of this on their lives.
And, like, that's kind of what I meant by that. I don't mean the people that are, like, doing the bad stuff. No, but totally. Like, normal people living in Moscow who are trying to live their lives.
You don't get to make the decision if your country goes to war or not. And we've seen that a lot of people in Russia very much oppose this war. You know, they're protesting. And it's very, very dangerous for them to be doing so.
To be protesting in Russia is incredibly dangerous, but also it's just incredibly courageous to see and very, very scary. President Zelensky's aide, Andrei Yermak, wrote an op-ed while in a bunker with the president of Ukraine, pleading with the world, particularly the West, for help. He says, "For a week, Russian bombs have fallen overhead. Despite the constant barrage of Russian fire, we stand firm and united in our resolve to defeat the invaders. Every day brings the possibility that our words may be our final ones, so let them be a plea for support to free Ukraine." He called upon the West to send more military supplies and equipment and impose even harsher sanctions on Russia to keep them from continuing to attack. He says, "We're thankful to our American and European friends, to democracies worldwide, including Australia and Japan, for their quick decisions to help us, for their sanctions against the Russian economy, for the armaments and equipment to deter the aggressor, but it's not enough. We need more. And please stop telling us military aid is on the way. Nothing less than our freedom and yours is at stake."
Yeah, I mean, it has been very interesting, though, and I know that a lot of people, or maybe not a lot of people, but some people are reporting about the way that this war is being reported, and it is interesting. I mean, you have people, you've got newscasters on major media outlets like CNN, of course, Fox News, saying things like, well, everyone's so appalled because, like, this isn't like the conflicts we've seen before. These are Christians. These are literally, there was one who said, these are blonde hair, blue eyed Europeans.
Oh, these are like developed people.
Right.
Like,
yeah. I mean, it's.
That's so disgusting. Don't do that.
It really is. Like, it really is.
Why are we lifting one country above the other like that?
Because
that's
the
so
U.S.
disgusting.
Is complacent in other conflicts. That's why, you know.
That's gross.
And
we
value
that.
Some lives over other lives. And I'm not here at all saying that we shouldn't be like helping the Ukraine in every way that we can.
Yeah,
like, we should be.
No, we should be. And honestly, like, they're pretty pissed off because the U.S. Has already decided to kind of go against one of the things that the president of Ukraine is really wanting, which is to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine. And it's a move that the Biden administration has already ruled out, which I didn't read why, and I couldn't find out why. I didn't have enough time to do all that research, but I'm curious as to why. I think that, oh wait, here. So Yermak believes that though this would be a serious escalation that could bring NATO into conflict with Russia. So I think that he's saying that, like, if there's a no-fly zone over Ukraine, that it would then have, like, NATO be involved somehow, or it would make the tensions escalate somehow. I'm not quite sure.
The tensions feel pretty escalated.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know why a no-fly zone would make things more difficult, but I'm just not understanding. But he does say, "We firmly believe that Russia won't stop at just Ukraine, which will potentially drag NATO into this conflict anyway." So they're kind of saying, like, NATO is probably going to have to get involved one way or another. So can you please just do it? We need your fucking help. Yeah. And I don't know enough about NATO and everything to give you an educated answer to all of this. But, like, why the fuck not? Help the people. Like, isn't that what I said this last week? Like, aren't we supposed to be like the superheroes that come in and save the day? We're not, but don't we like people to see us that way?
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not about what we actually do. I feel like America just likes to pound on its chest and be like, look at us coming in and doing the great thing, even if they're not really doing a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the concern is Russia's nuclear power. I think that is the concern here. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not, obviously, like, I'm not an analyst in any way.
Yeah.
I can't really speak to this in an educated way, but maybe Putin won't venture out into other NATO nations because he knows that that will bring down the weight of NATO on him.
Yeah.
So maybe he will limit it. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there's already been sightings of troops like heading toward other borders of Ukraine, if I remember hearing correctly. So I feel like there are other countries mm-hmm. that could be involved. I don't know if they're NATO countries or not, but
yeah.
I mean, that's the scariest thing about this, because right now, not all of us are like as involved as we could be, because we're kind of not wanting to fully get involved. But are we going to have to eventually? And what does that mean?
I don't know.
Why don't you know? Tell me.
I don't know.
I'm asking you because you're supposed to have the answers, Keegan.
I wish I knew what the future held for all of us. It's a very scary situation.
Yeah.
It's very hard to see. It's very interesting. Interesting might be the wrong word, but seeing this play out, seeing a war like this, a potential world war level war play out on social media for the first time
is bizarre.
Is very bizarre.
But it's also, I feel like, one of the most powerful tools for getting information out there. Although there has been a lot of doctored information, a lot of videos and things that were actually from other events that were being said that were from the war in Ukraine and all that kind of stuff.
I don't think that Putin maybe factored in the effect that social media was going to have.
Right. There's this like worldwide
instant.
Well, and that was actually one of the things that I had written in my notes up at the top. It says one, this was from, I didn't write down which article it was from, but this was mostly quoted from an article that I read. So this is how they're describing it. They say one side is an outward looking urban middle class who travel through Europe and have been westernized through technology and education. And the others are Putin loyalists, many less educated Russians or older people raised in Soviet propaganda. Mm-hmm. So it does kind of show like the different age differences, like how that is changing the way people are perceiving things, but also in your area of living, the amount of wealth you have and things like that all depends on how loyal you are to Putin.
We see that in this country as well. I mean, there is a pretty clear divide along very similar lines. But I've said it before on this show, the internet is a double-edged sword. Social media is a double-edged sword. But one thing that it does do is it makes you feel more connected with people on the other side of the world. When you are watching people get on TikTok lives or Instagram live stories in a country that is being actively invaded,
you can't really ignore it.
Talking directly to you about something that's happening to them, it is instant for you. You don't have to wait for the news to report on it and deliver, their view of it. You don't have to wait for a newspaper to travel across the sea to give you the information.
I mean, I just think about how during the Vietnam War, it was the first time to have any sort of war televised and mm-hmm. how much that changed the American opinion on war.
Yeah, because
that's what we're inundated with everywhere now.
You can't hide the ugliness of it. I mean, it's unfortunately, that's what it takes a lot of the time. Like, that's what it took for the civil rights movement. Like, that's what it takes a lot of the time is for people to have to see it. It's why anyone cared at all or were at all outraged about what was happening to Syrian refugees. It's because we were having to look at children going through something that we know that no child should have to go through. Yeah. And once you see people like as human beings, like that's
you
why
cannot ignore it anymore.
Yeah. That's why documentaries are so effective. Like
it humanizes you and it makes you aware of things that you didn't even know was going on. I know during, the civil rights movement, but also, during the abolition of slavery, there was a lot of times where it wasn't until Northerners heard the stories from the Southerners where they realized the gravity of the situation, where of course people know what's going on. But I think once you hear it from a firsthand account and there's some humanity behind it.
And it shouldn't take that.
It should not.
I wish human beings could just be more empathetic in
but
general.
Not, but it's empathetic, but it's also like a lack of wanting to see what's going on and just keeping your head in the sand and moving forward, where there are people like you and I who are incredibly empathetic and we hear one thing of someone being sad and all we want to do is fix it. But for most people, like they're trying to get through their own lives and you have to put it in someone's face and make it a connection in some way for certain people to make a change.
Right.
I wish everybody could just be naturally empathetic to everyone's cause.
Right. I think people are. It's like you said, especially right now, life is so hard. And I think making it, and of course, suffering is relative. It's harder for people in Ukraine right now than it is for us sitting in our houses. But it is difficult. And I think sometimes you just want to put your head down, put one foot in front of the other.
Because we have to go to our jobs and do our right. side because hustles we're and expected. Be with our families and yes. clean our houses
yeah.
and be nice and smile and get everything done.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, just we'll keep our fingers on the pulse of what's happening over there and
certainly.
Try our best to give you information when we get it. You know, we're not the best at this kind of news story, but...
No. But we care a hell of a lot, so we're going to talk about it.
We care a lot, and, you know, also we know that there are a million other sources out there, so yeah. we hope we plant a seed here, and you all can go and
further your education.
Further your education.
Yeah.
So I did want to talk about one last thing, and this is just in time for next week's full-length episode, so... Hint, hint. The House passed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act with overwhelming bipartisan support on Monday. So on February 28th, lawmakers passed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act in a 422-3 majority. There were only three people who voted in dissent, which also...
Why are there three people that voted in dissent?
Yeah, they were Republican representatives. Their names, because shame, are Andrew Clyde of Georgia.
Boo.
Thomas Massie of Kentucky.
Boo.
And Chip Roy of Texas. Are there...
Boo.
Chip Roy, of course.
Like, Chip Roy from Texas.
Yeah. So Bobby Rush of Illinois 2 years ago... He put this up, he introduced this, but it was blocked by the Senate in February of 2020 following the murder of Ahmaud Arbery. I don't know why they pumped the brakes on it after that or if they just didn't want to make any sweeping changes.
Well, because maybe then there would have been, maybe that would have changed the way that trial went and the charges and things like that, where that maybe if they were to change it in the middle of it, but at the same time, it sucks. There are black men and women killed every single day. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they would want to be waiting on just like one particular case seems very convenient to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I don't know.
Because you got to do it at some point.
Yeah, they put this in this article as though the two are related. So I assume that they are related, but maybe it was coincidence that happened at the same time as the other.
I believe, if I'm remembering my sequence of events correctly, I seem to remember that Ahmaud Arbery's story reached the media before George Floyd's did. Is that correct?
I can't remember.
I can't remember either, but I feel like he was the first one, but I could be wrong. And if that's the case, with everything else that followed, maybe then that's why they pumped the brakes. Should they have? No. That's when they should have taken their foot off the brake and put it on the gas and made some changes. But instead, they took the easy route and decided to halt it.
Yeah,
it
would be very coincidental to me that they halted it at that specific time and have now passed it pretty much immediately following the verdict.
Now that all of them,
so
you're right.
I don't know. I don't know actually.
That I'm putting my tinfoil hat on.
Yeah. So the anti-lynching legislation is, again, not a new proposal. It was originally proposed previously. There have actually been more than 200 attempts to pass federal anti-lynching law, which is, it's 2022. That is absolutely wild.
That was the first thing that I was going to say. The fact that we passed an anti-lynching law in 2022 is pretty fucking sad.
Yeah, it's horrifying that it's taken this long.
How about 1922 when it should have been passed? Yeah. Or 1822?
Yeah. So Rush said in a statement that the anti-lynching legislation will prosecute lynching, quote, when a conspiracy to commit a hate crime results in death or serious bodily injury. A perpetrator can receive a maximum of 30 years in prison under this act, in addition to any other federal crimes the perpetrator might commit. So
a maximum of 30?
A maximum of 30, but it's on top of whatever other
crimes. Okay, so if they die, if there's murder or
things. You face a murder charge, maybe even a hate crime charge on top of a lynching charge.
Okay, I understand that. It's just adding to the years that someone would have to be. I like it.
Right, and it's bodily injury, so it's not even necessarily murder, right? So he went on to say, today is a day of enormous consequence for our nation. By passing the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, the House has sent a resounding message that our nation is finally reckoning with one of the darkest and most horrific periods in our history, and that we are morally and legally committed to changing course. And it's about damn time.
I mean, for real.
Yeah.
For real. Like, use, I just like remember when I was younger not understanding, because I had a vision in my head of what lynching looked like,
right,
and not understanding what that was. The fact that we are now just changing a law for a word to me sounds very old timey.
Right.
You know, like, it,
well,
just,
I think for so many people think of lynching as only hanging.
Yeah, that's how, when, right, I was a kid, like, that's how, because in my head, and maybe that's just part of my, like, lack of education when I was younger, that it just, to me, when you talk about lynching, it sounds like such an outdated thing.
Right.
But it evolves and changes into different things. But I think it's that word for me where it just seems so, like, so old, not a modern word, you know what I mean? It just seems like,
right,
but bizarre it would take this long for that to happen.
It is something that still happens, though, you know, and I think
exactly because it has evolved. It's not just one thing.
Yeah, and from the language of the legislation, I think the difference between what will now federally be considered a lynching versus what is federally considered a hate crime,
right,
is that there has to be conspiracy.
Okay,
beforehand.
Premeditation.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, okay. So I would think that you could be charged with lynching
and a
hate crime. Right. Depending, yeah, on. And I think that that's why.
It sounds like they're almost doubling down on the hate crime part of it by adding the lynching,
right,
part of it,
right,
to it.
And I think that had this law been in place when Ahmaud Arbery's murderers were taken in, that they probably would have been charged with this because they did hunt him down.
Yeah.
You know,
and get another person, mm-hmm, involved and then continue to hunt him,
right,
down. Yeah. That it definitely would have been the case in that. Yeah. I wonder if there was something less sinister and just had to do with the law in order, like, to get, yeah, it prepared in time.
I don't know.
To get everyone to pass it in time. I'm not sure. But that whole thing with its relation to the Ahmaud Arbery case is really not sitting well with me.
It's interesting. I'm sure that there's a reason. I just don't know what the reason is. But regardless, they got it passed, and they got it passed just under the wire to make it in Black History Month, the literal last day.
Like, last day, yeah, of, mm-hmm, Black History Month. Dear Lord. Well, we're not done with Black History Month yet, because we always give you 4 full weeks of Black History
That's
Month.
That's right.
We don't shortchange you. And we're going to give you 4 full weeks of Women's History Month.
Yeah.
We're awesome. We do really great things. I was going to talk a little bit about Biden's State of the Union address. I mean, the biggest thing I wanted to talk about was Marjorie Taylor Greene and fucking Lauren Boebert.
They're embarrassing themselves.
It's
embarrassing.
They're children, like, in an assembly that's heckling the principal. It's disgusting. They should have been removed.
It's just, like, honestly, I wasn't even mad. I'm just like, this is embarrassing for you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm embarrassed for you. Like, you're old enough to be my mom. This, mm-hmm, is embarrassing.
But what's crazy is, like, when I Googled, you know, Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, State of the Union, I see a Fox article pop, mm-hmm, up.
Bravely defying.
Pretty much where she's like, I had to speak up. I'm like, oh, cry me a fucking river.
Yeah, you acted like you were at a fucking, like, Yankees game or something. Relax.
It was absurd. It was multiple times. But when he was talking about veterans who have been affected by toxins in war-torn countries that they've been to that are affecting cancer or that are causing cancer, which is something that he's thought was the cause of his son's death for a long time. So he's talking about something that's very meaningful to him as Boebert's, like, screaming at him and got boos from the Democrats that were in the audience. Like, it was so embarrassing. I wasn't even watching at this point. I was cooking in the next room. But when I heard those boos, Max and I were like, rewind it. What did we miss? It was crazy and so unprofessional and awful. And fuck you, Boebert and Green.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So there's an abridged version of all of that. But that is all we have for you today. If you haven't checked out our merch yet, you can go ahead and check out the link in our show notes or the link on our Instagram page at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. If you have any topics that you would like for us to cover on the news episode or on the full episode, you can go ahead and email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or direct message us on Instagram with those as well. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with your fellow listeners on the group page. Last but certainly not least, the best way that you can support Keegan and I is by leaving a positive 5-star review on Apple Podcast. So if you haven't done so already, hop on over to that app and give us some love. All right, that's all we have for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on.